but this is one of them, if not often the only one, because they're really good, and I strongly recommend them. So anyway, it's Parakeet. This is Louis Mantilla and Luca Graffera. Their website is parakeet.co. So parakeet.co, parakeet.co. Go there. They are very good at what they do.
Now Casey says he's rebooting. Well, that's recommended, I guess.
Wait, why does he need to reboot for an internet outage?
He says, I think internet just died. But is that what actually happened? Maybe probably he surveyed the house by shouting and say, does anyone else still have internet access? And somebody said, yeah, it's fine for me. And then he's like, maybe I need to reboot. But then he says he rebooted before the show. I don't think it's third-party RAM as discussed. That's
not this time.
That anymore. It's not an Apple thing. Although, I'm going to say it's not an Apple thing, but you've seen the YouTube videos where people like desolder the RAM or the SSDs and like replace them with other chips and stuff.
Are people really doing that still?
I mean, they do it as like a little bit of a stunt, but honestly, if you have the skills to do it, like these people who actually have the skills, you do save a huge amount of money. Because for the same reason you always did, it's just that most people don't have the micro soldering skills to do that or whatever, but they get it done.
I am surprised that that works. Like, that's incredible. Because, like, you know, you would think everything is so, like, finely pinned and, like, what tools do you even need to desolder, like, whatever the current interface of RAM is?
At least for the SSD thing, part of the benefit is that, like, Apple doesn't use SSDs. They just use, like, naked raw RAM chips, and the controller is all on the thing. And, apparently there's no pairing. Like, I've seen people do it to phones. Like, they upgraded, like, an iPhone Air to 1 terabyte or something. But, yeah, so when I see them doing it, I'm like, oh, my God, how could that possibly? Because there's so many little contacts underneath there, and they're so small, and there's so much crap all around it within fractions of a millimeter. It's like you can't touch any of that with your... apparently it worked. I mean, how long does it work? Does it corrode after some time? Does it less reliable? I don't know. But you just see, you know, they remove the old ones and then put on a new one, and then they boot it up, and it shows that it works. So it's like they, you know, at least they got it working.
The messages from Casey are having an increasing number of F-bombs in them over the last 30 seconds or so. So... we'll see.
Although notice he's not giving us any like actual debugging information, which is like, hey, does anyone else in the house still have internet access, or is it just you? But he's just like, F this, F that, don't know what's happening. Like, well, you're there, you could, you know, let's do some experiments. He said he's rebooting 3 times now.
Oh my God.
He's rebooting for real now. Mm-hmm. No, for real.
Yeah.
He's rebooting. And then he says, back in a second. I wonder, is he typing from the computer? I hope he's texting us on his phone that he's...
I would assume he's texting us.
I thought this was going to be a long segment, and it will, because for the bootleg people, depending on how much it ends up in the bootleg, I have so much to say about icons and this whole process. And so, yeah, maybe so much for Casey's short show. First, he started by doing 15 minutes on his keyboard, and now... now his computer is dead, and I'm going to talk so much about icons.
Well, good. I mean, I think this is what people tune in for, so to speak.
Yeah, and for the bootleg people also, like, we were talking with them about doing this. It's like, do you want just like a normal ad read, or do you just want just to talk about your icons? And they said, oh, you should just talk about the icons. I'm like, well, we're going to critique them, you know? Like, we're not, like, as Marco pointed out, I'm like, are you sure you want that? They're like, oh, yeah, no, sure, go for it. Like, they were very, like... very open to this. There was no, you know, they chose to take this route, and so they're going to get what they paid for with icons.
they're going to get it all right.
I mean, I think they already got a lot. Anyway, we'll get to it when Casey returns. I don't want to use too much content.
I love all this drama. Hey, he's back.
Christ on a cracker. You make one fucking joke about third-party RAM. One fucking joke about third-party RAM, and everything takes a dump. God, I'm so sorry.
Were the other people in your house also without internet access?
I don't know.
You?
Well, then I call Erin.
What do you mean you don't know?
Well, because I fucking called Erin. She's like, I'm walking Penny. What do you want from me? Oh, I'm so frustrated.
You don't need
Jesus
to call her.
Christ.
She's not in the house. All right. But you could have at least checked. Anyway. The debugging you were doing was telling us 3 times that you needed to reboot, but not giving us any of their information, as in, does the rest of the house still have internet?
No, I don't know. I'm looking over.
You're in the house. You can find out. Go downstairs. Pick up an iPad.
Well, it doesn't matter right now. I mean, I was sending you text messages from my phone, which I think was connected to the Wi-Fi, but I'm spazzing the fuck out, which I'm sorry, UK people. I know that's very rude, but whatever. I'm freaking out.
It's rude in the U.S. too.
And we're in the U.S. So anyway,
it's rude in the U.S. too.
Oh, well, fine. All right. You know, I'm not in my right form right now.
All right.
Okay?
Well, this is all just on the bootleg anyway. Just suffice it to say, Christ. We finished the ad read portion without you.
Thank you. I set Marco up for failure, and that was the punishment.
Just dropped off the internet.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I am so incredibly sorry. That is so deeply unprofessional. I don't know what the fuck happened, but I'm sitting here, and all of a sudden, Marco is not talking, but then I'm looking at Zoom. And I see his, like, you know how they highlight the person talking? And I see he's still got a green thing. And so I'm like, well, fuck, is this a headphone issue?
He ended
issue?
What he was saying, and I was waiting for you to do the call to action, and you were gone.
Which you should crickets. Have. Which I should have. I should have been there to do it, but I wasn't there. So then I'm seeing him, and in retrospect, I think it's because it had just frozen at that point. But yeah. I feel like he's still talking, and I can't hear him. Is this like an audio thing? So I'm starting to, like, figure out, well, how do the headphones that are physically connected to the audio interface just stop? I wasn't fucking around with my AirPods, you know, so it didn't, like, switch audio outputs or anything. And then I realized, wait a second, now I can't get to anything on the internet. And for the life of me, I'm trying not to restart, because then I got to give Marco two fucking files to work with. And so then I'm like, all right, what can I do? Tether, I try to do that. My computer's like, yeah, go fuck yourself. And so at this point, I'm like, all right, well, here's what I'm gonna do. I've got batteries in the USB 3, pre 3.2, whatever the hell it's called. I've got batteries in it, still recording. I'm going to reboot, and it'll survive the recording, and I'll have to compress the WAV file, WAV file, whatever it's called, that comes out of it. That's fine. At least it'll be only one file for Marco. And I go to reboot, and the motherfucker turns off. So I'm so sorry to both of you and to anyone listening to this disaster. This hasn't happened to me. This is such a boy thing to say, right? This hasn't happened to me before. This hasn't happened to me in a long time, and I'd make one joke about third-party RAM, and this is what I get. I'm so sorry.
That's amazing.
All right, we need to resume. So this sorry. Forever, and this room is getting hotter by the minute.
All right, yes, he says. All right, how do you want me to come in? Do you want to come in?
No, we finished the ad read portion. We can now just start talking about it.
I'm so sorry, guys. I'm truly, I'm joking about it and laughing about it. I'm very embarrassed. I'm very, 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 very sorry.
It's fine. All right. We can go right into our icons.
There's going to be more editing for Marco in this, too, as we slowly upload our icons to the interface and everything. But anyway.
All right, sorry. Go ahead.
All right, so let's talk about our actual icons. And we're doing this, we're trying to, like, reveal them to each other in real time, so there will be various pauses when we upload our icons to the ATP website, so we'll have URLs that we can put in the show notes so you can see them too. But I'm going to start with some images that I already uploaded, because when I've engaged with other companies to do icons for my apps before, and I always try to preface my engagement with these various designers by saying, I apologize in advance for what is about to happen. Because Marco was saying, like, he just has, like, vague ideas or whatever, and it's like, I may have vague ideas, but I have very definite opinions about everything. And so
one listening to the show.
Right? Yeah, I mean, it's the curse. It's like my old hypercritical blog post. It's like, look, I may not be able to do it, but I know what's wrong with the thing you did. Like, I know what I don't like about it, right? And that is, it's like, well, then what should I do? It's like, I don't know, but I know it's not that. And it's terrible. So I wrote a big document for all the icons I was getting proposed. And yes, I got two icons instead of one. Consider it a finder's fee, since I kind of initiated this whole thing. And this is in the document I put this thing, which is this, lots of pictures of this on the internet, and signs and windows and images of it or whatever. But and maybe it was a real thing that somebody did, but, like, some design, the story behind it, or the, you know, anecdote is some design bureau put this in their window as a price list for design services. And it said, for $100, I design everything, I being, like, the designer, right? For $200, I design and you watch. For $300, I design and you advise. $500, I design and you help. $800, you design and I help. $1,300, you design, I advise. $2,100, you design, I watch. And then for $3,400, you design everything. And the idea here is, like, look, you're hiring a designer, but it seems like you just want to do all this yourself. So, like, why am I even here? Am I just here to, like, be your, like, Photoshop monkey and just whatever you say? And I sent this and I said, I'm going to try to avoid this, but be aware this might be what this feels like. Because I like, every single thing you send, I don't have a problem formulating an opinion about very specific aspects of it, and that can be very frustrating. And as I always say, it's like, look, this has to be a, as we would say in the biz, Casey, time-boxed thing.
Yep.
It's not going to go on forever. We can't, like, let's iterate until you're happy with your icon. Like, that's ridiculous. That doesn't make sense. There's a certain reasonable amount of time, whether you're paying in ATP sponsorship slots or you're paying in actual money. it's not like this is not a 10-year long commitment to make an icon for you, right? So I said, it's perfectly fine if we go through a reasonable amount of time and we end up with an icon that we don't end up with an icon that I like. That is still services rendered. And that's how you have to think about design services. Don't think like, well, I pay for this, I should have the icon of my dreams. It's like, they're not going to spend a year on your thing. And if you can't find something that you like in a year, you don't own them forever because you paid for one icon. That said, they're really good at what they do, and I did not have any problem finding icons that I like. But I just wanted to throw that out there. So let's start with Switch Glass. It's my application switcher icon. Here is the old icon that Brad Ellis made for me, which I love. I told Brad exactly what I wanted, and he made tore the image out of my head and made that. And yes, there was an iteration. There was an iteration process going back and forth, many iterations or whatever. But like, I'm just so extremely happy with the icon he made. I'm like, this is what I was picturing in my head. So why am I bothering getting a new icon? Well, if you look at this icon and you know what happened in Tahoe, this icon does not fly in Tahoe. Tahoe requires all icons to fit within a rounded rectangle, rounded edge square that we call a squircle. And if your icon does not conform exactly to that outline, Tahoe takes your icon, shrinks it by like 70%, and shoves it in the middle of a gray squircle. And it looks awful. And you may be thinking, looks like your icon already has a squircle in it. Yeah, but it's not the correct squircle. It is the bounds of it are broken. It's supposed to look like a clear... It's on an angle, first of all, which the real squircle isn't. And then the bounds of the squircle are broken by the various shapes. It basically looks like half a centimeter thick, a piece of lickable glass with a circle, diamond, and square floating over it. And my idea is the circle, diamond, and square kind of represent the icons you're switching among. It doesn't really make sense. It's just the icon that I wanted. I got it. I love it. And Tao comes and says, screw your icon. And so, as I recently said when I was commenting on Rogue Amoeba's post about Squircle Jail, which is the gray squircle they stick your icon in, and if it breaks the bounds, I think this is the worst thing Apple has ever done design-wise to developers, and definitely the worst thing they have ever done to icons, forcing icons into this. I think if Apple wants all icons to be in a squircle shape, as they tried to promote in Big Sur, macOS Big Sur, then they should lead by example, and people should adopt it because they think it's the best thing to do. When they transitioned from bitmapped icons, like, you know, very pixelated style in classic macOS, to more photorealistic, larger icons in macOS 10, they didn't mandate it. They just led by example, and everyone said, yeah, we want to do that because it's awesome. And everybody transitioned. Everyone didn't transition to squircles after Big Sur because some people were like, it's fine, and I guess, you know, we'll update if it works with our design, but if it doesn't work for our design, we'll just stick with our old design. Like, take Rogue Amoeba. They had a squircle, but they had, like, a microphone over it, and the microphone just, like, poked out of the edge a little bit, and that goes into Squircle Jail now. But in Big Sur, they just kept their old icon because it still looked good, and it still looked like it fit in. Anyway, I hate this decision that Apple did, but it puts me in a difficult situation, which is, first of all, as we've discussed in past episodes, I wanted Brad Ellis's icon to live as long as possible because I love it. And so I found a way, painfully, to make it so that when my app is on macOS 15 and earlier, you see Brad Ellis's icon. And when it's on macOS 26, I had made my own awful, terrible liquid glass icon that I hate. But with the advent of 27 and, 15 getting farther in the rearview mirror, I knew I was going to need new icons. Because if I'm going to eventually upgrade to 27, which in theory will happen if I ever get a new damn Mac, I don't want to look at my awful Tahoe icon that I made. I want a nice icon. And so that was the challenge. And it's a difficult challenge for a designer, which is like, I love my current icon. The only reason I'm leaving it is because Apple is forcing me. And I hate the new icon style. Like, I hate Tahoe icon style. So now go make an icon that I love in a style that I hate while like abandoning an icon that I love behind it. So incredible challenge. And this is what you hire a designer for. Because I honestly had to say, like, my proposal for this was like, love the old icon, hate Tahoe, I don't know what to do, man. What do we got? I'm like, I said, I'm open to almost any idea, like, throw it out there. And what I said in most of my design engagements for icons, I'm like, let's just start with like napkin sketches, just like scribbles with a pencil and a napkin, because I need to see 1,000 of them to know even what direction to go. And here's the problem when you work with really talented designers. They're so good. Luca and Louis, who both worked on this, they are so good and so fast that their like throwaway pencil sketch would take me like 7 days.
Yeah.
And they like I'm in an iMessage conversation with them. I'm like, what about X, Y, and Z? And then they reply like 2 seconds later with the thing I just typed. And then I'm typing my response. I'm like, well, what if you did X, Y, and Z? And while I'm typing that, they have sent another revision of it. Like, I don't know how, I honestly don't know, physically speaking, what they're doing on their computers to make this happen. And no, they're not using AI. These are all handmade icons. They were so fast and like high quality, very fast work coming out with like iterations. And we went through so many iterations, and I asked them, as I always do, like, can I have all like the raw materials in the iterations? And they said yes, like, as long as I don't like use them or show them to the world. I just love seeing the process. So anyway, I didn't know where we were going to go with this. If you look at my icon, my crappy Tahoe version of this was just make it a white squircle and put a circle and a diamond and a square and they're gray. And that's the current Tahoe icon if you have have Switch Glass and Tahoe. And I hate it and it's ugly. And they come up with a bunch of different variations. First of all, they did a head-on one. They're like, hey, dummy, if you do a head-on one, here's how a professional would do it. And it's like, oh, that's a million times better. And like, and that was within the first 5 minutes. Like, okay, we're going to start on your icon. What do you think of this? I was like, you just like, great, sure, just spend like, because I spent way longer doing my terrible icon than they did making, like, here's how you would have done this if you had any clue what you're doing. But I was like, but is that the best thing? I was like, right away, I'm like, oh, well, thank God, because like, no matter how the rest of this goes, at the very least, that icon is already better than my existing icon and good enough for me to use. And then, of course, I had them tweak that 1,000 ways to Sunday to try different variations. Most of my ideas were bad, as usual, but like, they're so fast. And they were like, what else can we do? Like, come up with anything. They came up with all sorts of wild ideas. I drew the menu bar icon for my app, because my app doesn't even show in the dock by default. So you only see the menu bar icon. And the menu bar icon is a squircle with the diamond from the middle of the app icon in there. There's alternate menu bar icons as well. Most people just use the default. I'm like, maybe we could just concentrate on the diamond, so we could just do a diamond and a squircle, because the diamond doesn't break the bounds. And we did a bunch of experiments with that. And eventually, Louis came up with the winner. Or maybe it was Luca. I don't know who did it. It's a collaboration. They're both doing this. But in the messages thread, I was mostly talking with Louis. And the innovation here was, can we get the whole, like, a diamond and a squircle thing, which, again, is the menu bar icon, while also getting the old icon? So now I have to upload something, and Marco will edit this out.
Okay. Da-da-da.
upload image. That terrible,
what kind of jerk makes what kind of jerk makes the other host fill dead air? I mean, who would do that?
Oh, I know. We had good conversations about you while you were gone.
I bet you did.
You're gonna love the bootleg.
Whatever you said, I'm sure I deserved it four times over. God, I'm so embarrassed. Anyway.
All right. And here is after many revisions and iterations, here is the icon that I'm using. Now, you might look at this and say, it's one of those things like, oh, that's not such a great idea. That's obvious. I could have thought of that. But A, you didn't, and neither did I. And B, it is brilliant in ways that are not entirely obvious. Now, first of all, it's a beautifully rendered icon. It just looks really good. I could never have made this in a million years, right? What it is it looks like you took my old icon, rotated it so it's a diamond, and put it on a squircle background. It's like, haven't you just put yourself into squircle jail? I was like, no, this is essentially my diamond icon, because we had lots of icons that just had a diamond in the middle, but now the squircle is the diamond, because if you take the squircle and you rotate it 45 degrees, it's like a diamond shape, but it also has the floaty things on it, breaking the bounds of the thing. Such a good idea. Such like an amazing, like, you know, cut the Gordian knot. Like, oh, so you want a diamond, but you also want your old icon? How about your old icon as a diamond? And it's not metal anymore. They're translucent. And so there are some constraints I put on my design, which was, and I think this one helped, and maybe my users will not appreciate this, but I was pretty adamant about this. I do not care how my icon looks on Tahoe. Tahoe's dead to me. I don't care how it looks on Tahoe. And the reason this is relevant is because, as we've stated before, these .icon files, this format that Apple came up with, it's a bunch of resources and a recipe. So it's like bitmaps, vector images, layers and recipes and effects. That's what it is. And these icons are assembled on the fly by the operating system. It doesn't burn out bitmaps of them. It's like, I take your ingredients, I assemble them, I composite them, I apply your layer effects, and then I, you know, eventually it renders a bitmap that it keeps in memory somewhere or whatever, right? The 26 Tahoe's effects are different than 27's effects. they're just different, even for the same things. And also, 27 has effects that 26 doesn't support. And 26 won't even read the .icon files from 27, which makes everything complicated. So I said, I don't care how it looks in 26. Don't worry about making an icon that looks okay in 26 and looks okay in 27. Just concentrate on making one that looks really good in 27. Because I'm hoping, and maybe I'm wrong with this, but I'm hoping that they're not going to change the rendering of these icons every single year. It's just the Tahoe was a terrible mistake, and they're fixing it. And the 27 rendering will stay, and maybe they'll only add to it. But they changed how these things render. So the icon you're seeing, this is a bitmap made with the 27 rendering system. And it doesn't look as good in 26, but I don't care. That was hopefully that freed them up. And of course, we made a million variants of this. And by the way, one of the reasons they use these recipes for them is so they can have the different icon themes, which is separate from the system theme. Your system theme is light or dark on macOS and other operating systems. But there's a separate on macOS icon theme and on iOS and everything as well. And the icon theme can be default, which is what you're looking at here. And there's dark, which is a dark icon theme, which you can have regardless of what the system theme is. And then there's clear, which sucks all the color and life out of your icon and makes it clear.
That's terrible.
And then there's clear tinted, which is like clear but with a color tint to it. And the reason it can do that is because it just takes the ingredients, the layers and the effects, and then it composites them. And then, you know, for clear, it just sucks all the color out of it. And for dark, it makes them darker and stuff. And you can tweak, the .icon file lets you tweak, oh, this change. In dark mode, use this specular value, but in default mode, use this. Like, you can change it like that, but I'm pretty sure you can't have totally different icons in dark and light. Maybe there's a hack to do that with, like, visibility or something. But either way, so that's icon themes. But we'd made so many variations of this that I wanted to also have, well, I didn't want to also have, but like by the time we were done, I'm like, you know, we spent all that time figuring out how to do this icon. And I think you ended up making a really good dark version of it. Oh, did I just upload the same one again twice? No, there it is. Okay. And so there was lurking in the various iterations this icon, which is basically the same as that icon, but with a dark background. And I thought it was a little bit too dark for the default mode. And you can't have two entirely separate icons, I think, for light and dark mode.
No, you can.
Can you?
Yeah, you can make the entire like groups like in Icon Composer. You can have an entire group toggle on or off. You know, you can have totally separate layers and assets for different color schemes.
Anyway, the dark mode that Parakeet did actually fits in better with dark mode because they did like an inverted thing where like the shapes are light and the thing is dark or whatever. So I do like their dark icon theme mode.
Yeah, that was really good.
I also like this icon. So what I ended up doing was in the about box for Switch Glass, if you're in dark mode, you see this icon.
Oh, nice.
But you see the other icon in light mode. And I think I also made it, I don't think I've finished it yet, but I'll probably also make it so that if you click the icon, it will switch to the old Brad Ellis one as well, because I still love that icon. So anyway, that Switch Glass solved an incredibly difficult problem in an icon that just looks amazing and I'm very happy with. And you'll be glad you don't get to see the, you know, 10 or 20 versions of the same icon that we went through before we arrived at this. But suffice to say, I'm very picky and they were very nice to work with. And they solved this design problem very neatly. The next app, which hopefully this won't take as long. Sorry, I'm going on about this. Next one is Front and Center. Front and Center, I made the icon for because it did not require me to actually draw anything. My idea for the Front and Center icon, to remind everyone, Front and Center is the app that I have that restores the window layering behavior from classic macOS, where when you click on a window that belongs to a different app, it will not just bring that window to the front, it will bring all the windows that belong to the app to the front. That's how classic macOS worked. I'm very used to it. I wanted macOS 10 to work like that, and for years I ran DragThing, which did that for me. There were other Mac utilities that did that, but DragThing got discontinued. And I said, you know, this was my very first Mac app, so trivial. Once with a friend showed me how to do it and worked together to make this app. Anyway, that's all Front and Center does. It makes it so that when you click a window in another app, all the windows will come to the front. And you can toggle the mode, so you go back to what I call the modern mode, which is the default mode for macOS. But I keep it in classic mode most of the time. And so the icon for Front and Center, I decided was going to be three square platinum windows, like classic macOS style, macOS 8 style, Copeland style, if you will, windows that say front and center. The back window says front, the middle window says and in the title bar, and the front window says center in the title bar. And these are pixel for pixel exact incarnations taken from screenshots from Mac emulators, so I didn't have to draw any of this. This is what macOS 8 windows look like. I'm kind of surprised Apple let me have this icon, because technically every pixel of this was drawn by Apple, not me. But they don't care. It was too long ago. It's in the past. And having a pixel exact icon in macOS 10 doesn't really fit because it scales and everything gets blurry. So I made basically like all the different sizes of this icon so that all the edges are sharp square pixels, like none of them are scaled. In the pre-Tahoe days, in the days before the .icon format, you had like .icns resources, which said, give me your 16 by 16, your 32 by 32, by 64 by 64. There's a bunch of separate sizes, and you would put separate bitmaps for all of them. And as someone was pointing out on Mastodon recently, I actually have custom versions for 16 by 16 and 32 by 32 that don't look like the big icon, because that was the idea with icons, was like, if your icon, they used to be 32 by 32 max, but like, if your icon at 16 by 16 or 8 by 8 is unreadable when you try to scale it, draw a different icon at that size. And so my tiny icon just has one window, and my really tiny icon just has like the title bar stripes. All that dies with .icon, because .icon does not let you do that. You can't have separate, totally different icons for different sizes. It's like ingredients and a recipe, and that's it. And so I'm sad that that's dying with front and center. But I desperately need a new icon because these cascaded overlapping windows do not fit in a Squircle. And if you just stick them in the Squircle, they look blurry and awful. And once again, I made my own Tahoe icon, which was three overlapping windows, and it looked terrible. And so I threw up my hands and said, save me, Parakeet, do something here. And my guidance on this was less exacting than Switch Glass. I was like, I don't know, about layering windows. Like, the themes here is like classic macOS. I want to evoke classic macOS in some way, and I want to evoke window layering in some way, because that's what the app does. Go with that. And so, again, within 30 seconds, it was like, here's your app icon, but done by professionals. Like, yep, nope, that's already better. Three layered windows. And we went back and forth on this for a while. I don't know if we tried, maybe thought of a couple other things, but didn't really implement them. But yeah, it was sort of so clear that layered windows was the right approach. And how many iterations are there on layered windows? And yeah, there's a surprising amount. And we ended up coming up with this icon, which I'll paste in a second. Layered windows. And this icon is an interesting case study because, well, the other thing that I threw in here was like, you know, in classic macOS, my favorite desktop picture, the desktop background wallpaper, as I say in current parlance, because Windows won that war, was a particular shade of like purplish blue, just a solid color. It was one of the default choices in various versions of macOS.
Oh,
like in classic macOS, the progress bars were this color, and the folders were not exactly this color, but the progress bars and the folders are also kind of like a bluish purplish type of thing. And so that always reminds me of classic macOS. And so their idea was, let's do like a liquid glass style classic macOS window. So the frontmost window has the close box and the zoom box and the window shade box.
Oh, this is good.
And the stripes from a liquid glass from a classic macOS window, but it's rendered in liquid glass. Now, here's the thing about this icon. Unlike the Switch Glass icon, where you can make that Switch Glass icon the size of a billboard and it just looks gorgeous and you want to lick it, this one, as you make it bigger and bigger, you say, those window controls are pretty rudimentary, like not particularly detailed. And believe me, at various points I said, can we make those window controls more detailed and more like they look like in classic macOS? And we went through several iterations of that, and it was all a bad idea. Because the thing about icons is you're not looking at them at 1024 by 1024. You're always looking at them at icon sizes. And this is true of the Switch Glass icon too. Even though it looks gorgeous at great, big sizes, much of the design of the Switch Glass icon was because I would scale it down to like 32 by 32 and say, I can't see it. It doesn't read right. Like, I don't see the shapes. It's not working, blah, blah, blah. You have to look at icons at normal icon sizes. How is it going to look in an actual Finder window? How is it going to look in a list view window? How is it going to look on a dock with a sane dock size? No one wants to look at your gorgeous icon. They're not going to make it huge. So their first instinct was correct, which is we really have to simplify these window controls because it'll be hard to even see them at all. So they need to be like the stage makeup version of window controls. Like, it needs to be kind of like cartoonish and simplified and Fisher Price. And even though it doesn't look amazing when it's 1024 by 1024, you have to do that. Otherwise, it looks like a muddy mess when it gets at icon sizes. And so I'm really happy with this icon because, like the other one, this went through so many iterations of me shrinking it down and shrinking it down. And like, at various points, I had Finder windows open with 10 app icons, just 10 apps all. I would just build them all in Xcode, right? 10 apps all lined up, and I'd just be scaling them in the icon view slider and thing. And then I had them all on the dock, and I would scale the dock and I would look at them and it was like the 31 Shades of Blue thing from Google, only human powered and not metrics driven. It's just me staring at them of like, which of these 10 versions that look exactly the same to the casual observer is the best one? And yes, that was probably tedious for them, but it was difficult for me too. But like eventually I circled on this one. So now I have icons and same deal. I don't care how it looks in Tahoe. It looks bad in Tahoe. I don't care how it looks in Tahoe. I told them that. Don't blame them because my icons look weird in Tahoe. That's on me. I said, I do not care how it looks in Tahoe. It looks fine in Tahoe. It looks like an icon. But like as you make bigger in Tahoe, some of the effects aren't quite as good or whatever. Anyway, so the final thing I'll say about this is I'm not going to use these icons until I can build with Xcode 27. I could, in theory, build an Xcode 26. Like, Parakeet gave me 26 versions of these icons because, again, Xcode 26 refuses to read .icon files from 27 if they use any of the new features. So I can't ship these exact ones in 26. And I could just, you know, again, they gave me ones that work in 26 by removing the 27-only features and stuff. But I don't want to do that. So I'm not actually going to deploy these icons until I can do my first build with Xcode 27, which usually happens like the week they go GM or whatever. So my apps will continue to have hideous icons in 26 because they're my own drawn ones. And I will also get the maximum amount of time where the people on macOS 15 and earlier see the old icons that I liked. Because I did like, you know, even though I didn't really draw my icon with the layered windows, I did like it. So I'm maximizing that time. So even though I love these icons, they will not be on my apps until I can build with Xcode 27. But when that does happen, I'll be very happy. I will update my website. And like I said, I will probably add Easter eggs so that you can like click on the icons in the app somewhere to see my old versions. Because I really do love my old versions. It's not Parakeet's fault that I love my old versions got taken away. It's Apple's fault. And I'm mad at Apple for doing this to me. But I am glad to have beautiful icons made by professional designers that I'm really happy with.
Yeah, these are really good. It's surprise.
Professionals
right.
Doing what they're good at. Turns out it works well. No, they are very good. Marco, would you like to go next or shall I?
You can.
All right. So for me, obviously, I had asked them to look at call sheet. And if you recall, the original call sheet icon is what I asked them to take a look at. And basically what that was a clapperboard like you would see at a film set with a magnifying glass over it. And there, I will put a link in the show notes to Jelly's write up that he did a couple of years ago now about the evolution of the icon. And you can see the truly piss poor version that I was using that I had drawn.
Oh my God.
That it's drawing, that I had drawn as like my first internal cut at it. And then Jelly took it and made it look tremendous.
This is a special skill, Casey.
Yeah. Being
you mentioned
this bad
like the
at
things
it.
That AI couldn't make with that, whatever French band that I can't pronounce. Because it's so weird. I don't think an AI could have come up with something this bad.
No. Yep. I mean, even
I don't know how you did it.
The color selection.
Like, why?
I don't know.
And red on blue, it's like, you know, when you put red on blue,
John,
it does like the 3D
know.
Effect, like it makes your eyes really. Ugh.
I think my favorite thing about this is that the magnifying glass circle is not centered on the icon. Like,
no. Why would it be?
But it's not that. It's not. It doesn't look intentionally off center.
It's just far enough off to annoy you.
Right, it's far enough off to look like a mistake, not a choice.
He tried to get as many tangents as he could into one icon. He's got the little corners of it touching.
It gets better.
This is unfair. We're critiquing Casey's icon.
No, but it gets worse. It gets better slash worse.
This shows how important an icon designer is.
Yes. So if you zoom in by whatever means you choose on the icon.
Oh my God, there's
right
outlines.
There's an outline of the original magnifying glass. I don't know how I accomplished
couldn't be bothered that. To clean it up.
I didn't even realize Jelly and I were having a FaceTime call like a week ago.
The attention to detail that Casey brings to the, pixel art his icons is like, yeah, this is a leftover
my favorite,
stuff.
I think my favorite thing about this also is like, even in the blog post, the rectangle graphic that you put behind it is also like random colors that do not go with the colors.
That was Jelly's deliberate choice. So we were on a
maximum ugliness.
Yes, exactly. We were on a FaceTime call like a week or two ago, as I was talking about earlier in the show. And they pointed out to me, did you ever notice there's a second magnifying glass? I was like, what are you talking about? Look in the upper left corner. There's the outline. Oh my God.
It's like you designed by like, you know, the magic wand tool in Photoshop to just select this layer and shrink it down. But you missed all the little anti-aliased edges.
John,
magic wand tool would not do this.
So my marching orders for Louis and Luca were, hey, I really like the way that Jelly ended up with the icon. And I love the way it looks, but I feel like at this point it's looking a little bit dated. That's not Jelly's fault. It's just, you know, tastes and whatnot have moved on. So I'd love, you know, a refreshed, a spick and span version, if you will, of that icon. And
did your instructions include anything having to do with like make it liquid glassy, like make it fit in with liquid glass? Like, what was your stance on that?
I could look up, I'd have to find the conversation, but I could look up what I told them. But it was, I believe in summary, it was, yeah, you know, modernize it. I think it makes sense to do something liquid glassy, particularly around the magnifying glass and the icon. But one of the things I said to them, unlike some other people they may have spoken with recently, is you are the professionals. I'm going to give you some thoughts, but do what you think is best. Because I remember being on the other side of the table as a consultant, which I don't know, John, if you ever did consulting during your career, but I did plenty of it. Okay. It is abso-effing-lutely infuriating when a company hires you to bring your expert advice and expertise to them, and then all they do is bicker with you about the things you tell them to do. And obviously some bickering is normal and, you know, back and forth, that's a good relationship, et cetera. But oftentimes I would come into some other company and be like, hey, I'm here to do X, Y, and Z. And they would say to me, great, but you need to do it in exactly this way, in exactly this order, or else we're going to be very upset and tell your boss. And like, that's not a relationship. That's not constructive. So what I said to them was, hey, this is the sort of thing I'm thinking about. For example, I really like that Jelly had text on the icon. I genuinely do. I think it's really fun to have these little like nods to different movies and different things. And like the joke that he made, which we were talking about just a week or two ago, about the Search for Blue December with Kay Celis as the director. I think that was hilarious. But it's a very busy icon by my instruction, but it's a very busy icon. And so maybe we can simplify it. And so Louis and Luca took a look at it, and here's what they came up with. And I absolutely love it. I think it looks great. This is basically a modernized, simplified, liquid glassified version of the call sheet icon. I don't know when I'm going to deploy it, but it is my intention to make this the default icon. I intend to leave the existing icons because, you know, there's a zillion icons in there that you can choose between. Jelly had done various versions of the clapperboard. Then my friend Stee, I'll put a link to his write-up about the icons that he had done. All of those are going to stay, but this will become the default. And we went back and forth a fair bit about, you know, what do we do with regard to the, like, jokey versions of the icon. And one of the things I said to them was, you know, like I said a moment ago, I like the text, but that's not a hill I'm looking to die on. But one hill I am looking to die on is I don't want to lose sight of having, at the very least, a pride icon and a trans icon. And so they said, we absolutely agree. And they came up with cuts for both Pride and the trans version of it as well, which I'll put links to that in the show notes also. And I think that these also look absolutely great. And they keep with the spirit of what I'm trying to accomplish, but in a more subtle way. Now, I would like to hear what you guys have to think, but before I do, I will tell you that I opened these in Icon Composer, which is the mechanism by which you mash together all the different things that John described. And there are 6 different portions of different, like, I don't know what these are called, like objects groups? That grew. There are more than 6 groups. There's like 7 or 8 groups.
Layers, right?
Yeah, I guess layers. Yeah, that's probably a good word for it. But the highlights in the magnifying glass, there are 6 individual highlights to make it look just so. And this is the sort of thing you get from a professional designer. And, you know, Louis and Luca really took the time to make this look good. And about the only thing that we bickered is too strong a word, but bickered about was their original cut had the 2 like rivets that make up the pivot points for the clappy part of the clapperboard. Originally they had them kind of, the top one in particular was kind of hanging off the corner a little bit, that's the way it looked.
I mean, it can't be hanging off the corner out of the outline, because then you get in squirrel jail.
Yeah, so it wasn't literally off the corner, but it was like positioned in a slightly funky way. And I think it was probably because, I don't have a copy of that icon in front of me right now, but yeah, I think it was because it was perhaps, I'm doing a poor job describing it, but physically that's where it would have been if this was a real clapperboard. And we worked a little bit on like bringing it in, and we decided, you know what, it makes more sense to have the the rivets where they are now, such that it fits the icon better, even if physically it isn't perfect. But working with them was a pleasure. I like to think I was pretty easy on them.
I was easy on them too. Like, if anything, they deferred to me more than they should have, because I was like, what do you think of this? I'm open to your ideas. Throw stuff there. Don't take what I say as gospel. Just because I give you a suggestion, like, they would just implement it in 2 seconds, and then I would see it was a bad idea. but that's the process. I needed to see it. But, like, I was totally open to anything that, I mean, the entire design of my archive, I did not think of at all. It was entirely from them. So, I definitely am open to their ideas. The only difference is, like, when they show me something, I immediately know what I don't like about it. And that is difficult to hear if you're not, if you're not a professional and you just take it personally or whatever, but they don't at all. Like, they're just, you don't like that? Fine, I'll change it this way. You don't like that? Fine, I'll change it this way. And that can go on for a while if no one has any good ideas, which is why I'm always saying, please throw out anything you got, throw it at me, because I have no problem. I have no problem judging it. Just, put it out there. But yeah, it does, it can be tiring to hear that every single thing you do, oh, you found something else wrong with this. It makes you think you're never going to be happy. And I try to emphasize, like, already, like, with their first iteration, like, already I would take this icon, it's done. Like, it's better than what I have. Like, already we've succeeded. Everything else is gravy. But yeah, I will iterate for a while to try to get it polished up the way I want it.
Yeah, so I think my executive summary of the call sheet icon is, what if you took Jelly's icon, which, again, I love, and what if you made that, but what if like Apple, or in this case, former Apple designers came through and made that look more Apple-y in a good way. And I think that's where it landed. So I'm all ears on what you two have to say about it. Or if you don't have much to say, we can move on to Marco.
Honestly, I think this is a great icon. I mean, I like the previous one as well. But the previous one, I think the if you had to criticize the previous one, the biggest critique would be it's just had a lot going on. It's very busy, and we did, by the way,
a member special where we critiqued our home screen icons, which included Marco and Casey's apps, because they're iOS apps. So if you want to hear us critique Marco Casey's old icons, there is a member special for it.
Yeah. Yep. But I think this is a great evolution. Like, I think, it is a common tragedy when icons are redesigned to, like, throw away all the old personality and just have some kind of simple, blob or swoosh or whatever. And, this is not what happened here at all. This keeps pretty much all of the personality minus the text, which, and again, I think the text, that was it was a cool reference. It was also very busy, and you couldn't no one's reading that at icon size anyway. And so This is a really great direction for it to go in. I even have the maybe slightly hot take that I think you can use the Rainbow Pride icon as the main icon.
That is true, actually.
Because it isn't that different.
I mean, it depends on how you want to brand it, because that was one of the concerns for all of our icons, I imagine, is that we have mentally, at least in our own minds, like an idea of our branding as expressed by our icon. And your default icon, despite having variations, does express your branding. So I look at the Pride version as icon, I'm like, oh, that's the Pride version of Casey's icon. But when I look at the default version, I'm like, oh, that's call sheet. So
yeah, fair.
Yeah, and I also kind of like, I like the idea of someone going in and making the choice to use the Pride icon in a Pride way, not in a, like,
yeah, no,
I'm not trying to punish them.
I don't use your default
way.
Icon either, by the way. Like, that's part of what makes it fun, is that because your icon lends itself so well to variations, it allows personalization. And I agree. I think the Pride one looks great, just color scheme wise, right? It looks amazing. Mm-hmm. And so if you like that color scheme, you just pick it. I personally use the Apple 6 colors one.
I'm not going to put it in the show notes, but they did make a version of that as well.
Please,
so that will be in there.
What I choose, but it allows you, that's the whole point of custom icons. They allow you to express yourself, but your default ones does say call sheet to me.
I guess you're right though. Like, making, like, having the Pride one be like a special thing.
Exactly.
It makes it more special than if it was just was what the icon always was.
That's a better way to put it. Yeah, that's
And there's
exactly
lots more. Like, there's, I don't know if there's an official website, but, like, here's the Pride flag, here's the trans Pride flag, here's the lesbian Pride flag. There's like more color combinations than you might expect. So you could check that out and to add more variations if you want.
That's true. And also something that I believe Marco said a moment ago was that when I came to them and I said, look, what I'm asking for, I guess, is just a modernized version of the current clapperboard icon. But really, go to town, do whatever you think is best. If you have some wild ass idea that you want to try, go for it. Let's see what happens. And it was interesting because Louis Lucas said to me, while that would be fun and all, you don't want to give up on the, I feel gross saying this, but the brand recognition of the Clapperboard, and you don't want to throw that away, which is what Marco, I think, was saying a moment ago. Like, let's not throw that and put that aside. Let's embrace it and just modernize it and make it simpler. And they did look at keeping some text on there, and the three of us quickly concluded, nah, we just got to take it off entirely. And the colors on the Clapperboard can be one of those sort of, if you know, you know, sort of situations. And I think that's for the best.
So here's my critique of the icon. First, I'm jealous of you because you have what I wish any of my icons had, which is if you want to use the new refraction effect in the 27 OSs, you need to have something behind the thing to refract.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
yeah.
It doesn't do anything. And so, like, look at the Apple Maps icon in iOS 27. They put a little clear refracty thing around it because the background is, whatever Apple's map tiles are with, like, the green grass and the roads or whatever, and that gives you something to refract them. Man, we tried with my icons, but, like, because of the branding coherence and everything, like, trying to maintain the branding, it's difficult to get something. I just don't have a bunch of, like, sharp lines with colors contrasting against each other. Guess what you have, Casey? You've got the whole top of your icon. It's a bunch of stripes or lines, so you can go to town on the refraction. And you have a magnifying glass, like it was already in your icon. So I'm jealous that your actual icon branding fits so well with 27. But I will say that, like, this icon is another example of, like, stage makeup. I think the specular highlight effect and the chromatic effect and everything around the magnifying glass are way overdone at giant sizes. But then shrink it down to normal icon size, and you're like, oh, that looks great. That's what you have to do with icons. Just as my advice to anyone out there, because if you engage a professional designer, they'll do what you tell them to do. Don't tell them to do, like, you know, my instinct looking at this big icon was like, oh, it has to look amazing at 1024. Doesn't matter what it looks like. No one's ever going to look at it at that size. You're never even going to look at it at that size. Your icon has to look good at icon sizes. And yes, a designer will do what you pay them to do, and they'll do what you ask, but you can ask for things that are wrong and bad. Hopefully they'll try to dissuade you from that and say, I suggest you not do this. But in the end, you know, the client gets what they want. You want the client to be happy, so whatever they're happy with. But my advice to you is you should do what Casey has done here. Or, I don't know, maybe the highlights didn't bother him, but, like, I think this looks just so, like, stage makeup, like, so overdone at massive sizes, but it looks perfect at icon sizes. And especially for an iOS app, there's not even a way, really, in, like, the home screen to zoom your icons at 1024, right? It's always going to be icon sized, and at icon size, this looks great. I think they did a great job.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right, Marco, what you got?
All right, so I also took kind of a double dip approach here. I was like, hey, listen, if you want to do the Overcast icon refresh, that'd be great, but I really want you to do my new reminder app.
Well done.
Casey's really making your self-made icon for the reminder app look good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. anyway, but first, they did do Overcast. Here, this is the link here. So what I asked for with Overcast is basically, like, just like a little tweak for iOS 27. Now, I've had Louis look at the icon over time a lot. You know, Louis's done all the tweaks, or most of the tweaks over time in the 12 years that Overcast has been a thing. And he's been dying to have me change the outline color, I think. and he's like, try this. And so, not only does this new icon for Overcast, which I think I'm going to use, I'm like 90% sure I'm going to go with it. Not only does it have, like, perfect updates for the 27 glass refraction looks and everything, like, impeccably done, but he has changed the outline color of the tower circle from black to a dark blue. And blue goes really well with orange. And I think I love it. It's... The very first day he showed me, I hated it. And I'm like, this is going to need some time. Because it was just, you know, I've been looking at the same color scheme of white, orange, black for 12 years or whatever. And then now I'm like, I think this is awesome. I think this little tweak of shifting that circle from black to dark blue, I think it really gives a level of freshness to the icon that I really appreciate. And this is, like, again, like, when you work with a good designer, they will come up with suggestions and ideas that you would not have. And you don't have to say yes, and I don't say yes to all of them, but I thought this was a really cool new direction. So this, I think, is great. I'm going to live with it for a little while on my devices and see like how I like it over the next few weeks. But I think this is awesome, and I think I'm probably going to go with this.
And so this original design, like the whole shape of this was Brad Ellis and Louis?
Yeah, Louis and Brad at their previous Pacific Helm company, like years and years ago. And then over time, I've had both Brad and Louis at different times tweak it for different needs. Like, you know, like when the Apple Watch became a thing, you know, a couple years into Overcast, you know, I had Brad help me with that. Later on, I had Louis help me with an update for, you know, little tweaks here and there. Last year's 26 icon, the first Liquid Glass icon, that was Louis. He literally just unsolicited sent me one. He's like, just like, here, I tried this. I made this.
Oh, I remember this.
And I was like, oh, this is perfect. Can I use this? He's like, yeah, go ahead. I'm like, great. Okay. So it's been you know, Louis and Brad, you know, over the years, and now, you know, Louis and Luca, I've you know, worked with them through this text message, you know, through this iMessage chat that we've had, which, by the way, working through iMessage is such a delight when you're doing that, like going back and forth with, oh, here's an image here, and you paste links here and there, and it's so much faster than like going through emails or Zoom meetings, like, to, you know,
I
months
Google
apart
Docs,
or weeks apart.
I mean, I did through iMessage as well, but I also made Google Docs.
Well, of course you did. But anyway, yeah, working with Louis and Luca for this has been a pleasure. But yeah, so the Overcast icon, that was the kind of the easier one. Now,
let me critique the Overcast icon before I move on. So first, you are in the same situation as me in that you don't have refracting things over changing colors. Like all of your content is not over anything else that intersects it in a way that refraction would take effect, so you get the especially this is an example of, like, at 1024 this looks gorgeous with like the specular highlights on the bottom of the little rings and the chromatic shadows. These are all effects that I know from Icon Composer, but like unlike call sheet and unlike my front and center icon, the bigger you make this one, the more the details look amazing and definitely look more liquid glassy. But the plain fact is, you don't have a Casey situation. You don't have a shape that goes over the top of another shape that intersects that you can refract. So if refraction is actually turned on any of these shapes, you would never be able to tell, even at 1024, which is, it's not a shame, because I think the bones of this icon, like the original design of circle, radio tower, signals, orange, like, it's so strong and it's so, you know, so well branded that, like, you know, who cares about stupid, you know, a refraction effect in the 27 OSs? Who knows if it'll even be there in 28? So you were wise to keep things the way they are. For the blue and the circle, I don't mind it. When I saw it, I noted that it was blue, but I'm like, yeah, that works. Because as you noted, it's like, you know, the whole cliche of like teal and orange or whatever, complementary colors that is attractive together. It does change the branding a little bit, but it also changes it from more of like a Halloween tiger thing with black and orange to be more like complementary colors, more artistic. My one criticism of this icon is that I would have gone through 87 iterations trying to make the bottoms of the radio waves read better at small sizes.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe, you know, maybe that can be done. Honestly, when you see it on device, you don't have any problem.
Yeah,
with
well,
that.
I have. I'm looking at it shrunken down, and big sizes looks amazing, right? Shrunken down, comparing it to the current icon, the circle part of it is not the part that stands out, like the blue versus black. That's not the thing I notice. The thing I notice is at the bottom of the little things fade a little bit. But that's me. You know, I have my opinions. And honestly, like I said, with a vast majority of my opinions, oh, I don't like this about this, change it to be that way. And they would do it. And then I would look at it and say, nope, I was wrong. So that could be, yep. That could be the case.
I actually did a few of those back and forth with the next icon where I was like, can you try like this? And oh, no, you're right.
Yeah, but that's the process. Like, you need to see it. I mean, maybe they already know because they've either already seen it or have more experience. They know it's going to suck. But as the client, you have to say, show me it with this thing like that. And then you have to be honest with yourself and say, just because I asked for it, like, oh, you gave me the thing that I wanted. I'm happy with it, right? I mean, I did it with all my icons. It's like, ask to see the variation, and then judge it honestly. Did that make it better or not? Or do you like it worse? And most of my changes made things worse. But you have to, if you're honest about that, hopefully you'll end up with an icon at the end that you like.
Yeah. And with Overcast, I wanted to be really careful because not only does, you know, Overcast has been around for such a long time. The icon, like, I think they pretty much got it right the first time. You know, there have been tweaked, you know, little tweaks over time, but they've been really minor tweaks. And so I didn't want to change the Overcast branding because everyone loves it. I love it.
Yeah, no, it's great. It doesn't need to change.
Yeah, the users love it. Like, so it doesn't need to be like a whole new, you know, like the way Instagram changed their icon radically, you know, a few years in and everyone hated it. Like, it doesn't need that level of refresh. It just needs like little tweaks to move forward over time with system conventions and minor fashion changes. But anyway, all right. So next, I'm like, all right, now I need an icon for my new reminder app. Now it is, I have finally a name for the app. I don't think I want to reveal it yet. But anyway, so I have a name for the app. But I went into this, I gave them a very broad brief. I'm like, all right, it's, you know, it's an app that's very, it has a very basic UI. It's a reminders database front end that's simplified, focused on, you know, people who snooze a lot and don't want
to
forget.
I've been waiting for you to accidentally blur out the name of the app. Keep going.
Yeah, people who snooze a lot and are, you know, constantly forgetting things that, you know, if it's not reminding them constantly, like every day, like if you dismiss the alert for reminder and it never reminds you again, like that thing will never get done. You know, it's an app for forgetful people and for ADHD and, you know, people whose brains work like mine, which is we need a lot of gentle reminding all the time about tasks, and we procrastinate and put them off a lot. You know, most days I am snoozing at least 5 different things that are alerting me every single day. I'm like, I'll do it tomorrow. Or yeah, kick the can down the road. That would have been a good name. Anyway, kick the can. That'll be my backup name in case I run into any trademark problems. Anyway, so. I gave them the brief and I'm like, all right, I developed this app on the flight on the way to my Hawaii Big Island family vacation. And I loved visiting like the Big Island. I love like the lava flows coming off of the you know, all the volcanoes and that kind of form the island in the middle. There's all these like dark brown and black like lava flows of different, you know, all these like rocky, beautiful landscapes. I loved visiting Kona coffee farms. And, you know, I looked up like, okay, well, you know, what is the volcano that the Kona farms are on, and you know, what's the shape of it? Maybe I can involve that shape. And I went back and forth, like before we even had this thing, I was going back and forth with AI brainstorming of like, what kind of concepts can I work in here? And one of my favorite ones was like a sunrise, because every day is a fresh start. Like, that sounds great. I love that. And so I'm like, all right, what about a sunrise over the volcano that Kona coffee grows on, you know, and let's, and I even briefly, I'm like, oh, what about my old peace icon, which is a sunrise, which I forget whether Louis or Brad made it, but it was one of their icons back in the day. And I was like, all right, I can involve the peace sunrise with this volcano, maybe with coffee. And I'm like, okay, so I gave this all to Louis and Luca. And Louis, you know, very opinionated, but also very diplomatic. And he was like, listen, this is a lot of concepts. This is, like, this is like too many things to work in. Let's pare it down. You know, you can keep the name, you can keep the volcano, but you probably don't want that name with a volcano. It doesn't really work. And it's like, okay. And with the sunrise, I had a million different, you know, ideas, none of which, and by the way, the problem with all of those ideas is that, like, at first I was like, all right, what about a coffee leaf? Like a coffee, because I visited a coffee plantation. What about like a coffee leaf cluster with the coffee cherry? Well, that just, it looks like a holly. It doesn't look distinct.
It's a Christmas app, yeah.
Right. All right. What about the Kona volcano? I forget, it's Mount, I forget which mountain it is, but it doesn't really have a distinct shape. Because volcanoes don't look like cartoon volcanoes. They look like mountains. And so it doesn't really have like a very visually iconic shape. You know, sunrises, sure, they're fine. But, you know, there's not that much distinct about that. And you know, all the different other metaphors. Like, one of the things that I considered was a forget-me-not flower. I thought, oh, that's great. Forget-me-nots have a beautiful shape. Well, that's used for like Alzheimer's and dementia organizations. It's not really a happy association. So I'm like, okay, that I probably shouldn't use that. And so like there were all these different, you know, metaphors and ideas that I was trying and that I just was hitting walls with. I couldn't get anywhere with any of them. And finally, you know, within a day, Louis and Luca came up with, hey, what about a lighthouse? I'm like, huh. That, okay, let's talk. So I also told them, by the way, I'm like, I'm using this color, this dark red, as my tint color in the UI, and I want to keep it. I don't want to be talked out of the dark red. And they're like, all right, we can work with that. You know. So here, I just pasted the link in. So this is the icon that they came up with, and this is through some iteration. So the reason a lighthouse, I think, is a fun metaphor is that the whole role of the app, I was saying, like, it just constantly reminds you of things so you don't forget. It's like a basically like a beacon. It's constantly, hey, don't forget this. Don't forget this. Don't forget this. And that's kind of what a lighthouse does. Like, you know, the way the lights swivel around, you get like the periodic. And this was like, you know, when I was going back and forth with AI, it was giving me all these different metaphors of like waves and things like that. And it's just, it was so hard to come up with anything that wasn't already taken in the productivity space. And the lighthouse is better than all the AI generated ideas. Like, and that was all Louis and Luca. And I was like, oh, actually, I love that also because I love Fire Island, and I would love a way to represent Fire Island, and Fire Island has an iconic lighthouse on it. So I showed the picture, and actually, I didn't realize, Luca grew up on Long Island, and they've been to the lighthouse. And so it was an obvious, like, oh yeah, right, of course, the Fire Island lighthouse. And so this actually is styled somewhat, you know, somewhat evocative of the Fire Island lighthouse with the stripe, like that's kind of how it looks.
It's interesting that you couldn't get talked out of your dark red, but it's like, what if we just go with the Fire Island lighthouse kind of rusty maroon? And be like, nope.
Well, the dark red, I like the dark red a lot. First of all, I think it looks great in the UI. And second of all, I like the idea of retaking red, because red in reminders means overdue. And if you work the way I work, you always have just a wall of red statuses in reminders. And I like the idea of like, you know what? I'm going to take that back. I'm going to make the whole app red, black and white, and just make it like this new dark, cool red. And, you know, F your overdue red. So anyway, so we went back and forth a few times. And, you know, at one point I was like, oh, can you make the lighthouse bigger? And I'm like, I recognize I just told designers make the logo bigger, but it actually was the right move in that case. And they also had the idea of, what if we tie in the visual identity to Overcast's icon also? And that's why it has the circle with a tower in the middle with something coming out of the tower, you know, horizontally. And it just works so well. And this shape, it goes, you know, all the different color modes, like the monochrome icon modes, the dark mode, like, they just nailed this. And I wouldn't have had any part of this concept without working with them. Like, that's, again, a huge part of their value. Not only are they really great artists, but they're really good at coming up with branding and concepts too. Like, and they drew, and like John was saying earlier, like, the speed of iteration. Like, I was on my couch one night with my laptop, and they were just cranking out, how about this? How about this? And like, I couldn't believe how quickly they were generating really good icons. And then at the once we decided the direction to go, they're like, okay, we're gonna draw this up for you. Like, what were you just doing? Like, they're like, in their minds, probably their rough drafts.
Yeah, those are their napkin sketches. Yeah,
right. And they were like amazing. Like, I was like, I thought that was the final icon. Because even their rough drafts, like their whatever they were, like, you know, crapping out with no time, were amazing. You know, of course, you know, then the final one has all the nice specular highlights and, you know, it is more refined, but I couldn't have been more happy with this. And I showed it to a few people, and everyone I showed it to was like, oh yeah, that's it. Nailed it. Like, love it. So, I gave them a very difficult problem in the sense that I really didn't know what I was looking for. And I gave them way too many things to pick from and they guided me correctly into something that was simpler and nicer and a better logo, and I think will help it stand out more in a sea of check marks.
Yeah, I'm just so glad that it's not list items and check marks on this icon. Because that's an impossibility. I mean, you could have asked for that, and they would have done it for you if that's what you wanted, but it's like, man, you think it's a crowded icon field if you're going to do check marks or line items. No matter how you abstract them, no matter how you think you're stylizing them or being clever, it's like, wow, there's a lot of icons with that.
Well, but and to be clear on that point, though, like one thing that Louis pointed out during the process, because I was saying, like, please don't make it look like a check mark because everything else is a check mark. And he was like, well, most people are only going to have like one of these types of apps installed, like, you're not really, the users don't really care if it looks like a checkmark or not, because they aren't seeing a wall of checkmark apps on their devices. Like, in the App Store, you might see a whole bunch of those. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, look, let's be honest. Like, App Store search is not something that was ever great, but in its current form, where it's just filled with ad slots and you know they're only going to turn that up, organic discovery on the App Store is effectively dead. Apple killed it. Competition and just a flood of apps made it pretty bad, you know, for a while. But with search ads and then increasing the search ad load and increasing the search ad size, Apple has destroyed organic discovery in the App Store. So no one is going to find this app by just searching for apps like, you know, ADHD reminders or whatever. Like, no one is going to find it that way. It's going to all have to be paid marketing or, you know, social or referral marketing. So I know better than to think, than to presume that the App Store is going to do anything for me for this, because they won't. And all they'll do is take more of my money and okay. You know, and look, hey, Turnus, prove me wrong. I would love for this direction to change, because I think it's horrendous. But I also know the reality of the world. Apple makes a bunch of money from App Store search ads, and I don't think they're going to want to turn that off. And they're not even going to do anything that will turn it down. They're going to only crank it up over time, because this is the problem of services revenue, every single time that there's a bit of a soft quarter on the horizon, they're going to want to crank whatever knobs they can crank to push those numbers up. And when you already have an ad system in place, you can say, oh, what if we just add more ads? What if we just crank up the ad load a little bit? Like, that's always a knob that is sitting right there, so tempting to press when you need a little bit of a boost. So we know they're going to do that over time. So anyway, but Louis was good to point out, like, the sea of check marks is not as bad of a thing to avoid as I was assuming it is, because I was thinking of it as a big grid of apps on the App Store. It's all check marks, but no one ever sees that, and no one's going to see my app in that anyway. Where people see this is on their home screens. Like, that's so that matters a lot more than whatever everyone else is doing. But that being said, I'm really glad
it's a Reminders app, though, like the line item. So at the very least, if you differentiate your icon from the Reminders app icon, it helps it stand out. I mean, yes. I guess people can hide or delete that one, but, like, I'm not sure everybody does.
Yeah. And my like draft icon looked a lot like the Reminders icon. So anyway, yeah, very, very pleased with how this icon turned out, and working with Louis and Luca was just delightful.
All right, so here's my critique. I think the circle branding is a really good idea. And I would have thought of that for the Reminders icon. I think the lighthouse is a great idea. I'm kind of amazed that the lighthouse icon doesn't have any 27 refraction effects. You're like, oh, it's light and it's like a reflecting and lens, and surely we could do something with that. But I can see why in this design there's not really a place for that to be here, and it would just kind of muddy things up a little bit, and it would like mess with your branding, because the only things the light intersects with is a circular ring, and you don't want to like refract that because that messes with the circle, and then the inside part, which I think would just look muddy or whatever. I would have 100% gone with the rusty brownish or more maroonish colors of the actual Fire Island Lighthouse, which I know has been repainted several times, and I honestly don't even know exactly what color it is now, but if I put a link to the Wikipedia page where you can see it,
it's black and white.
From some time in the past, the roof of the building has always been kind of maroon, and then the lighthouse itself has kind of been brownish, but there's a little bit of a reddish tint, especially at sunset. I totally would have done that with the color of this, because I'm so nostalgic for the Fire Island Lighthouse. But branding wise it makes more sense to use the color from the ring. And since you love this dark red color, this is the icon you wanted, and that's what you got. The blue, I would have definitely iterated 30 times on that blue. Because, God, how many backgrounds did we have for, like, shades of gray for my stupid icon? Like, I just would have gone around forever in that blue. It's kind of a sky blue, but maybe more of, like, a baby blue. Or, like, there's some flower that's this color blue that I don't know the name of. Like, and so that I probably would have chosen a different color, but it does go well with the red. Overall, like, the idea of this and how much better it stands out from the other icons, and the thing I like the most about it is the expansion of the light. Like, you know, a cartoon representation of a lighthouse, like, let's make the light rays look like they're a cone going outwards, right? Because that's kind of like what, when you were talking about the idea behind the app and everything, the idea of a conical shaped light illuminating things and alerting and saying, you've got stuff to do, that is expressed by the by the like I'm holding my arms out now as I talk about this. That is expressed by like the spreading cone of light, and I also particularly like the white square coming right at you. Say yes, you have tasks, you have things to do. Light coming right into your face. So yeah, good job.
Yeah, and this was like I went back and forth a few times with them, you know, like tweaking the shapes a little bit here and there, and you know there was never any friction going back and forth with them on stuff. Like they're professionals, and so it wasn't, there was none of that kind of like that, like, you know, difficult artist dynamic, you know, like there's none of that like attitude. It was just like, okay, yeah, let's try that, and then we try, oh yeah, that's actually better, you know. It was great. There was even, you know, at one point I said, hey, let's try it without the circle, just being the lighthouse, you know, full size of the icon, and they whipped it together. Like, oh yeah, actually, now that you show us that, you're right, that is worse, go back to the circle. Like, it was lots of iteration like that, and it was all very pleasant and very nice to do.
I think this looks great. I think my favorite part of it, as silly as it sounds, might be the circle branding, that to tie it in with Overcast. I really think that's a clever idea that I don't think I would have come up with, but I love now that I see it.
Yeah, and like when you see these icons, you know, near each other, it just they just look right together. Like they look really good together.
Yeah, well, one of the to wrap us up, one of the things that I said in my like proposals for icons that I always say in all my proposals for the icons, which is going to sound wrong or possibly rude, but is how I think about the process, is that the icon should be better than the app.
Oh, it is.
like the you know, whatever you think your app does and how great you think it is or whatever, you always want an icon that looks like, wow, that looks like it's an icon for an even better app than yours. That is the sign of a good icon, where the icon is better than the app, where you're like, the app is good and I like it and all, but man, that icon makes it seem like this is going to be the best app in the universe. And it's like, well, you don't want them to do that, because they're going to be disappointed because your app is not as good as the icon. I'm like, no, that's what I want out of an icon. I want the icon to elevate the app. Like that's why I tell people, like, oh, I don't want to spend all this money. Because if you actually pay and don't have a podcast where you give sponsorship slots for your icons like we do, if you actually pay for your icons like I did for, you know, Hyperspace, for example, you're like, oh, that seems like so much money. It's not. It is the best money you will spend on your app. Like, everyone, you know, you have to have your app. Obviously, your app has to serve a need and be useful and blah, blah, blah. You're like, oh, should I hire a designer to change all the screens on my app? By all means, if you can, do that. But if you only have a very limited amount of money, spend it on the icon. Icon is so important, and so many apps I know of, I'm like, that app's okay, but the icon makes it seem so much better than it actually is. So that's what I tell everybody with my things. I want your icon to be better than my app, which is not hard because my apps aren't that complicated and amazing, but that is the goal of the icons. And the second thing I'll say is, and this is the sign of a successful engagement with a designer of any kind, is, you know, I guess, you know, it has to fulfill the needs of the thing you're designing or whatever. But in the end, also, the client has to be happy. And I think, looking at all of our icons, I think my icons are the best. And you know why? Because they're my icons and they're what I wanted. And I better think that. That's the whole point of this. Doesn't mean my icons actually are better. It's like, oh yeah, I should be happier with my icon than I am with yours, because those are your icons and you asked them. And I hope you feel the same way, that your icons are better than mine. And that is the sign of a successful engagement with a designer. You should come away happy. You should be like, I cannot believe how great this is. And I look at my icons and your icons, I'm like, oh, I got the best icons, clearly.
Yep. No, they are really great. And I apologize for this lasting as long as it did, but the conversation is really about the icons, not about the two of them. But
also, surprise for non-bootleg listeners, Casey disappeared for a while.
Yes, also, I accidentally disappeared for a while. It's a whole thing. But anyways, if you're interested, Louie and Luca over at parakeet.co, not .com, .co, P-A-R-A-K-E-E-T.co. Let me do that one more time, P-A-R-A-K-E-E-T.co. Check them out. They're really great.
Yeah.
Marco already read that icon while you were gone.
I figured, but you know what? Worst case, he cuts it out.
I mean, if we talk about them for like an hour, I think they can get a second call to action.
Exactly. And, you know, worst case scenario, he cuts that out. I don't have a timer now to how long this episode is. I think we're running like 2 hours now.
206.
I feel like we should do the terminal thing, or perhaps the Safari thing, or the Xcode thing actually is quick.
Terminal thing is short.
Yeah. Okay. You sure?
Yeah.
All right. All right, let's continue on. And Apple has done something kind of interesting. Tim Hardwick in Mac Rumors, at Mac Rumors. Let me try that again.
Of Mac All Rumors, right. Around Mac Rumors.
Do you want it to be at or in? I change my mind half the time I write these things. Is it at Rumors?
At
the Verge?
It's on Mac Rumors, right?
Wait, well, do you think it should be at?
I think it should be at.
Because I'll just be consistent if you want it to be at.
I don't think it's a do or die thing, but I think it should be at. Anyway, all right, okay. Let me reboot that whole thing.
Okay.
All right, let's move on. And Apple has done something kind of interesting. And Tim Hardwick over at Mac Rumors reports, in macOS Tahoe 26.4, Apple introduced a new security pop-up that warns Mac users when they paste a command into the terminal app that could be harmful. Apple has now published a support document explaining why the pop-up warning appears. That support document and this Mac Rumors article will both be linked in the show notes. The support document is called, "If Your Mac Blocks a Terminal Command, Paste or Script." This alert appears if you don't regularly use Terminal and you copied the command from somewhere like a website, chat agent, or messaging or email app. Scammers use these channels to instruct people to paste malicious commands into Terminal to harm your Mac or compromise your privacy. This alert helps make sure that you aren't tricked into running a command that you didn't expect. I think this is interesting that they say specifically, if you don't regularly use Terminal. I think that's doing a lot of work in a good way there.
Yeah, when I first saw this feature come up, I'm like, oh no. Because I copy and paste stuff into Terminal all the time. Is this going to be another annoyance where it's like constantly in my face warning me about things? And I have never seen this dialog box. And I've pasted a lot of things into the Terminal right? on Tahoe. Because even though I'm not running on my main Mac, I do dev work on it or whatever. So however they calibrated that to like decide, should we annoy you with this or not? I think they did a pretty good job because it has basically never bothered me. That also makes me think, okay, well then how is this actually saving me from anything? Is this security feature actually useful if it's like, oh, I don't want to bother people who use a terminal a lot? I think one of the other things they use to determine whether they should bother you with these dialogues is whether or not you have the dev tools installed, like whether you have Xcode installed as another signal in their formula for should I warn you about this or not. But I guess the thought is like the people who, I don't know if this is true, but the thinking is the people who are the most vulnerable, the people who don't regularly use a terminal, who don't have dev tools installed. The reality is, we are all equally vulnerable to getting screwed by this. How many times have all of us pasted in curl pipe, you know, a curl URL pipe bash because some website told us to, which is just incredibly ill-advised. But I think the reason we all do it is like we make a microsecond judgment of the trustworthiness of some website and the potential consequences of deleting our entire home directory, and we just roll the dice and figure, look, if this website really was malicious and someone had replaced this install script with a script that exfiltrates all of my data, I probably would have heard about it by now, so I'm just going to roll the dice and do it. That's a terrible way to live. We shouldn't do that. And anytime I can avoid running a curl pipe bash, I avoid it like the plague, but I have to admit sometimes I just do it. And so this is what it's trying to save you from.
Yep. So the actual dialogue reads as follows. Possible malware paste blocked. Your Mac has not been harmed. Scammers often encourage pasting text into Terminal to try and harm your Mac or compromise your privacy. These instructions are commonly offered via websites, chat agents, apps, files, or a phone call. Then you get two options, paste anyway or don't paste.
Yeah, I like that they try to tell you, like, maybe you're talking to someone on the phone right now. Maybe you're having a chat with them. Are they telling you to paste a bunch of stuff in your Terminal? Beware. They try to phrase it in a nice way. I would probably be more hyperbolic to be like, danger, be careful, you know, what do you, just did someone tell you to do this? Because you can't say make sure you know what the command is doing, because nobody, like, if you don't use the terminal, you don't know what the command is doing. It's just giving you hopefully a microsecond of pause to say, maybe think about this again. And maybe people will just click the default button and say paste anyway, yada yada. And obviously the scammers will explicitly direct you, oh, your computer may say this, but don't worry. Like, social engineering in the end wins no matter what. Like, because the social engineers know what they're facing and they will instruct you that this is a normal thing and it's just your computer trying to be safe. But rest assured that what I'm telling you to do is safe because I'm your friend, so please do it. That's how social engineering works. Nothing can save everybody. But I think this is a useful feature to add.
Yeah, this is very smart.
Can you continue with the next part? Because it gets a little bit more sophisticated.
So if your Mac shows a malware detected paste blocked or malicious script blocked alert, these alerts appear if macOS detects a command or script that contains known malware and blocks it. And so the difference here is it's the dialogue says your copy and paste was blocked because it contains malware. This action did not harm your Mac.
Yeah, that's the real key to this is, like, they're obviously keeping a database of something, you know, whatever, regular expressions that match commands. You know, it's a cat and mouse game. But once they find out, hey, this website has been, you know, compromised and their, you know, curl URL pipe bash thing now contains malware, hopefully they can quickly add that to the database. And then if you go and paste it, let's say, you know, 8 hours or 24 hours after the malware is detected, your Mac will say, I'm not even going to give you the option. I know for a fact this thing has been compromised. Like, whether it is a compromised legitimate website or like an obvious malware website with a URL that looks like a legitimate one but isn't because they have a domain name with like a typo in it or something like that, this is where the real protection comes in, which is every single thing you paste into Terminal they're looking at and comparing about their list of known malware that I hope they're keeping up to date. So I think this is a great feature. There's actually there was a story that came out just today about the Opera web browser adding this feature, like specifically just in the web browser itself. And this is like the multiple layers of protection, like adding it to Terminal. Shouldn't this be OS-wide? Should it be per app? Every little bit of this helps. Any place where there is an app or an operating system or some sort of subsystem where it's in a position to potentially keep track of a list of known bad things and check them for them, you know, this is a great use of our comparatively infinite resources. You're like, oh, I don't want something looking at my pasteboard every time I paste them. It's like, it's 2 microseconds. The amount of grief it will save you by catching you from installing malware is great. So I heartily endorse this feature, both for the reason I said earlier, that I've never had to be bothered by it, and the other reason, which is if I ever do something stupid, I have some chance that the macOS is going to save me from it.
All right, do we want to do Xcode or we want to just call it?
I think that this is...
What? I think we can do Xcode because it's not that
long. Yep. All right. Okay. Sorry for yet another edit point, Margo.
That's fine.
All right, let's talk about Xcode 27. And John, you've made a discovery with regard to it. Tell me about it.
When I was watching WWDC sessions, I think where I saw it first, a couple people mentioned, maybe it was like the group labs or this Q&A, that Xcode 27 adds a menu command to do something that we Apple platform developers have been doing manually for many years, which is deleting the derived data folder. When Xcode does stuff and builds your app and everything, it has a folder, I don't know where it is, it's like a library application support Xcode or library developer Xcode. Somewhere in your library directory, there is a directory called derived data that Xcode fills with, I would assume, intermediary products of building, or anyway, it's like it says, data derived from the stuff that you're doing. And sometimes when you're using Xcode, like your build starts failing or your app won't launch and you can't figure out why. And the folk wisdom is, oh, just delete the contents of your derived data folder and then just rebuild. And for years and years, Xcode has had a command, you know, command shift K, I don't know what the actual command is, which is like, what is it, delete build products or something? There's like a menu command and a keyboard shortcut that says
clean build
clean
folder.
Yeah, clean build products or something like that. And you're like, why would, if it has that command, why don't you just use that command? Well, experience has shown that sometimes you hit command shift K and you hit command B or command R to build or run, and it still fails. And that's why everybody says, oh, command shift K isn't enough. You have to go to the terminal, type RM minus RF, blah, 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 to path to your derived data folder. Don't make any typos. Don't, you know, like, very carefully. And there's apps that do it. It's like the Dev Cleaner app that will delete your derived data folder. And so in Xcode 27, Apple essentially relented and said, we know everyone is deleting their derived data folders. So we're going to put a menu command in addition to the existing command shift K command, a new command that I forget what it's called, like delete derived data or something like that, because we know you're doing it anyway. And rather than you manually typing an RM command or dragging a thing to the folder or whatever, why don't you just let us do it safely? And this was a topic of conversation and commentary, sort of like off script commentary, many of the group labs and stuff, where Apple folks talked about the feature. And this kind of reminds me of the sync now button or whatever in Messages on macOS, where like if you have iMessage syncing to the cloud, Messages I believe was the first app Apple has made in ages where they added a button that when you click it, it does the syncing, like sync now, right? Mm-hmm. And that was the whole idea behind syncing is, and the lack of those buttons is, oh, you should never have to manually control this or monitor it or deal with it. We will just sync what needs to be synced when it needs to be synced, and you shouldn't have to worry about it at all. But in reality, there are situations where you're like, come on, when is it going to sync? And it's trying to do what it thinks the right thing to do is saving your battery or waiting until later or doesn't know there's data to dink. And you're like, I just wish I had a button that would say, just sync stuff now. And so that one app added one. And in some ways, it's an admission of defeat. We tried to make a completely transparent system where you would never have to worry about when things sync and things would just always be in sync everywhere. But obviously we failed because no system can be that perfect, and we're not, it, our systems aren't even good enough that nobody ever wants it to sync now. People do want it to sync now sometimes, and so we'll add a button. Now, what does that button do? Is it like the elevator door close button where it just makes us feel better by disabling itself after we click it for a while and then re-enabling? It's like, yeah, we did the sync totally, when in reality it's just a timer and it's faking us out. Like the door close elevator button, if it makes people feel better, it's still kind of doing its job, even if it doesn't actually close the doors on the elevator. So I do still have suspicions about the sync button, but I'm pretty sure it does something because I use it occasionally. And when I click it, it does sync, and maybe I'm being fooled. But anyway, delete derived data. Is it the elevator door close button? Is it giving up on the notion that, like, look, we know there's something wrong with Xcode sometimes, and the only solution is to delete derived data, and we wish that wasn't the case, but sometimes it is the case? Or the theory presented by Apple people, which I think is the actual truth, when you have some problem in Xcode that's causing your thing not to build or whatever, and deleting derived data fixes it, that's very often a sign that something is screwed up about your project. Usually you have some dependency wrong. You haven't expressed the dependency that exists between some submodules, such that when you run a parallel build, if you get lucky and thing that depends on the other thing happens to go first, you know, the thing that you depend on goes first and then the thing that it depends on it goes second, everything's great and it works fine. But because builds happen in parallel and you can't guarantee timing, sometimes when you build it, the thing that depends on it gets built after the thing that depends on it, and it's never going to work, right? And that's because you haven't correctly expressed the dependency in your project, and you've just been coasting on luck. So yeah, deleting derived data does quote unquote fix it, but the problem is in your project. And so I think this is an even more powerful sign where Apple's saying, even though this probably isn't our fault most of the time, it's probably your fault, we still know that there are lots of people who are going to delete the contents of their derived data folder as a regular course of doing stuff. And even though it's kind of like wrong, like I'm sure that's why this feature hasn't been added for years, A, every once in a while it might be the right thing to do. And even if it is wrong, shouldn't we just make our app helpful to our users, even though we know most of the time it's because their project is screwed up? And that, I think, is one of the most hopeful signs from Apple software design department that I've seen in years, right up there with the sync button in messages, where they are willingly giving us a feature even when the problem is not their fault, just to try to make their app more useful and feel better to customers. I think the next iteration of this is, hey, please find all the dependency problems in my program that are causing this to happen, but you know, one step at a time. So I give delete derived data a thumbs up, even though it's probably still highlighting a problem in our projects.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I think this is great. I do this dance constantly.
That's my question to you two. Do you two delete derived data constantly?
I shouldn't have said constantly. It's frequent enough that it annoys me every time I do it, because then I have to, I typically can get by with what I need by doing, what is it, Command Shift K or whatever we talked about earlier, that is, you know, a clean build folder. But occasionally, I shouldn't have said constantly, occasionally, I don't know, maybe once or twice a month, I'll have to go in there and just toss everything in derived data and start anew.
You, Marco, do you delete derived data?
Almost never. This is not even, like, this is a thing, like, I've used the app Dev Cleaner, which is a fun app. It's like a little app for the Mac that basically, like, helps you clear out and find, like, huge storage usage from Xcode, especially for iOS developers. There's been a number of needs of this over the years, and Dev Cleaner always keeps up.
Good.
And by the way, Xcode added features that they haven't Sherlock Dev Cleaner, but Xcode itself now has, like, that you can look at the installed components and delete stuff from there. So they've taken some lessons from Dev Cleaner by incorporating some of those, but Dev Cleaner still goes a little bit farther.
Yeah. Dev Cleaner is great. I can recommend it. But yeah, this basically integrates, you know, some of that functionality into Xcode. But yeah, I almost never do this. It is very rare for me to have a problem that is not solved by either cleaning the build folder or quitting and restarting Xcode.
Yeah, my main use of delete derived data is with betas, because my luck with betas building my apps is terrible. As I said, the first beta of Golden Gate could not even debug my apps. Beta 2 of Xcode can. I don't know what the problem was. I don't care. But when things are buggy and broken in betas of Xcode on beta OSs, delete derived data is my friend. But I'm pretty sure I've literally never done delete derived data on a non-beta Xcode on a beta OS. Like, I mean, in release versions and stuff, I've pretty much never had to do it. I do use DevCleaner, so maybe I'm, you know, cleaning it out as a matter of course, because DevCleaner actually will remind you, hey, you haven't run DevCleaner in a while, maybe you should run it. It's a nice app. But I don't have all the weird iOS SDKs and simulators installed. Like, that's where it builds up. Like, oh, you have a simulator for iOS 12 in here. Do you still need that? Probably not. That'll save you some disk space. But yeah, I don't expect to use this command, but I really like what it says about the pragmatic nature of Apple's software decisions, and I hope we see more things like that.
Yep.
All right, that it?
We're good.
All right, thank you to our sponsor this episode, Zocdoc. Well, I guess two sponsors, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to remind you, you got to do both, but he'll figure it out. We just talked about Parakeet so much. Nope.
Thanks to our sponsors this episode, Parakeet and Zocdoc. And thanks to our members who support us directly. You can join us at atp.fm/join. One of the many perks of membership is ATP Overtime, our weekly bonus topic. This week in Overtime, we're going to be talking about, should Apple create a handheld gaming platform? Good question. You'll hear us talk about it in Overtime if you join atp.fm/join. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. All right, Casey, I'm going to see Goose in a few hours. What should I know? You've seen them more recently than I have.
I don't think there's... I know you're snarking. I don't think there's anything to know. I will say that if you haven't listened to the new album, you should do so.
Of course I have. In fact,
okay,
so
I figured.
What I've been told in my household is that the music of my bands that I like is more tolerable when it's their studio recordings than when it's their live recordings. So the day I was told that, I immediately started playing in the car the new album, which it's Big Modern, right? That's the new album?
Yes, I'm trying to.
It's very yellow.
Yes.
So yeah, so that, and I believe that was immediately regretted by the other members of the family. But yes, I do like the new album a lot.
Yeah, so I would check that out again, like listen to it on the way down or something. My personal favorites, if you're listening, for those of you who are perhaps not as familiar with Goose, I really enjoy Savenger. I think I'm pronouncing that right. It's the third track on the album. It's very inspired by 80s, but not straight 80s, if that makes any sense. Like, it's got some of that vibe from the 80s, but it's not like, oh, this could have been recorded, you know, 40 years ago or whatever. Good to Be, they often do a very extended and very good jam on there. In fact, one of my favorite jams of the year so far is a Good to Be from, I think, Florida, maybe. I'd have to look it up. And Torero, which I did hear in Virginia Beach and is also excellent. So those are my three favorites off the new album. It's exactly what you expect. Like, when we went, it was great when we went in October. Now there's obviously a little bit newer and different material. When I went a few weeks ago, I think we talked about it on the show, but we were in the general admission section, which, very glad I tried, very glad to never do that again because I'm old.
You're too old for that now, Casey.
I am way too old for
that. Oh, yeah. I always buy seats.
Yep. And suffice to say that Marco is returning to Virginia to go in with me to see Fish. Jeezy peasy. He would have loved that, to see
next
Goose
year. We'll see Fish together.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll get you need one more year of Goose before you're ready for that.
Right. We worked together. We actually were on the phone with each other trying to figure out which one of us had the better seats. And it turned out that I almost got the Marco seats from when we saw them in Richmond, which is to say the very front row of the seated section, but behind all the lunatics in general admission. So I'm very much looking forward to you going. Depending on what I'm doing this evening, I might be able to actually sit down and watch it, because, again, as we've talked about numerous times, I won't belabor this, but if you go to nugs.net, you can pay for a subscription and you can actually watch live broadcasts of many bands, including but not limited to Goose. I will hopefully be able to see some of that show tonight, and certainly within 48 hours of it being done, you and I can go and either grab it from Nugs or, you know, grab it from Bandcamp or whatever. So I'm very much looking forward to it. To the degree you can share, what is the transit scenario to get you there? Are you training the whole way?
No, I'm taking a ferry in like an hour to ferry to the mainland, John, and then just driving for
New Jersey?
Driving 2 hours to New Jersey.
Oh, so that's the mainland, New Jersey.
Sure, okay.
Yeah.
Is this an outdoor? Is like a I don't know, the venue, is it an outdoor thing?
I don't actually. I wanted to look that up before I left. It's PNC Arts Center. I forgot. I think it's indoor. Oh no, it's outdoor.
I think it's indoor, outdoor. That, or?
Bring your fancy sunscreen.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's true. Well, I mean, it does start at 7, so it's not, I'm not going to need that much sunscreen.
Maybe you don't need it, but like, yeah, I wonder if it's going to be, because it's hot. It's hot today. At least up here, it's hot.
Yeah, that's why the reason I was going to look up the venue before I left is like, do I bring pants? If it's going to be like a big indoor air conditioned thing, maybe I'd bring pants. But no, I'm bringing shorts. It's a shorts kind of venue, and this time I'm not going to have my pocket in my front shorts pocket.
your wallet, you mean? Yeah.
Well, oh yeah, right. Sorry.
Did you get your replacement wallet yet? Or is it still
I going? Sure did. I got my new. I should link to it in the show notes. It's I forget the heck what the heck it's called, but it's the. Oh geez, hold on. now
Dream
I
of the 90s is still alive, Marco. You could have a wallet chain. I don't think that was ever incredible. Your style, but you know, maybe it could be.
Let me see. Hold on. We've frozen your card. We've frozen your card.
Belt loop can't just get torn off.
Slimfold. That's it. It's the Slimfold wallet. Slimfoldwallet.com is their site. Yeah, I will link to it. This is the one I got, the Micro Tyvek, but otherwise the Micro Softshell is what I've been using all these years. The
Tyvek. Your wallet is made of house wrap.
Yeah, the Tyvek just is even lighter weight, but here the Softshell is like the more normal looking one. But I like this because it still allows me to carry like some cash, which I don't use a lot of cash during the rest of the year, but on Fire Island, a lot of things here use cash. So,
and when you go to Europe, you like to give hundreds of dollars to the pickpockets.
Yeah, well, you have to support the local economy.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, so I definitely did that. but anyway, these wallets are great because they weigh nothing. And I think this is originally from Dan Provost of Studio Neat. I think I heard about it from him first. But it, yeah, this is a fantastic kind of minimal, very lightweight wallet. I very much enjoy it.
What color is yours?
I got the
orange.
I got myself the orange one of the Microsoft shell also, because I figure like I think it's a limited edition, so I wanted to get that. But the Tyvek one I'm using currently is the reddish one, the red pattern.
To go back a brief step to Goose, because that's all I ever talk about these days, I noticed, because I follow them on Instagram, and they had, I either posted or reposted that, I believe it was PNC, the PNC Center had said, because of the heat, you can bring, I think it was up to 2 water bottles for a sum total of a gallon of water, which I don't know what that is in sensible units.
It's
going to
be big lines at the bathroom.
Right? I don't know what it is in sensible units. It's probably a few liters, but like a lot of water can come with you
in order to
survive.
Yeah, especially because like, I mean, look, not only is it a concert, it's a jam band concert. So there's a good deal of drug use going on, and many of those drugs make you very thirsty. So I think that's probably very good advice.
And also, it's going to go on for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if I were you, I really would bring at least one large water. Or, I mean, double check my math on this, but I would bring a large water bottle because it is going to be toasty.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, I'm very excited and very jealous. I'm also excited about, I mean, we're not going to see Goose until the fall, but or not together, I mean, but I am very much looking forward to that as well. And they're going to be in Charlottesville, so we could potentially go to my favorite Virginian bagel shop, and you can laugh at how much you hate. Well, no, you'll probably be reasonable. It would be John that would laugh at how much he hates them.
Yeah.
But we can do that together. And actually, perhaps we can make our triumphant return to Chicken Salad Chick.
Yeah.
Look at us go. All right, let's do some titles.
Have you ever seen I saw somebody the other day here at the beach with one of those, like, around-the-neck personal, I guess, air conditioners or fans?
Yes, yeah, it's like a fan or something. Yep.
Does that do anything?
I don't know if that does anything,
but they're, like, the ones that cool you also tend to be heavy because they have to be powerful and they need batteries, and so it's like it's a trade-off. Like, do you want a heavy thing on your shoulders and around your neck in exchange for the cooling? I don't know.
It looked like something that was really not worth the size and bulk. But I mean, maybe it's one of those like secret gadget hacks that you just, that work really well and no one really talks about it. But it did not look that way.
I mean, you just need someone else. You just need your assistant to hold it. So it's pointing at your neck, and then you just spritz some water on it. You know, whatever it takes to stay cool. But yeah.
For what it's worth, Aaron got me for Christmas, I think it was, kind of as a gag gift, but kind of not. It's a fan that has two belt clips on it. Just hear me out. Hear me out. It has two belt clips on it, one of which is facing, like, the U of the belt clip is facing upward, and the U of the belt clip, the other one is facing downward. So it's on either side of the fan.
So you can fan your feet.
No, hold on. So on either side of the fan, there's, you know, there's a clip. And the idea is you clip one side to your shorts or whatever, and the other side gets clipped to your shirt. So what this does is it blasts air up your back. I probably look like a complete freaking moron on the one or two times I've ever used this, but it is delightful because you're getting cold air blown right up your back, or perhaps your front if you wanted to put it there or whatever. But it is incredible the difference it makes. Even if it's just blowing warm air, the fact that the air is moving really, really helps.
Can you mess it upside down and blow air into your pants?
You probably could. Yeah, I don't see any reason why not. We'll see if I can dig up a link for the show notes. No promises. But that actually works far better than you would think it would.
Okay. And I feel like, too, like, yes, you probably do look ridiculous. But when it's that hot, fashion is out the window. Like,
right.
Shorts are already a pretty significant fashion compromise. Like, you know, you do what you got to do when it gets that hot. It's like, all right, you know, and also, like, especially in this context, like at a jam band concert. You're not going to be the least fashionable person in any row. Don't worry.
Yep. I think I did find, I don't have it next to me, but I'm pretty sure I found it for the show notes. I just linked it in the chat room as well. So you can check that out. I'm probably not doing the world's greatest job describing it, but you can sort of kind of get the gist as you look at all these different pictures. Actually, one of them is shown as like having it around the neck, which I don't recommend, but you can see that there's, if you look at like the fourth image, they show three different wearing styles. And the one I'm talking about is basically having your shirt tuck into it so that you're blowing air up.
The picture really of nice. The guy holding the delivery box. Unimaginable cooling effect. Look how happy he is.
Yep, so much happy.
Look how happy he is to have this photoshopped onto him.
Yes, yeah, exactly, yeah, right.
And I like the fake Photoshop sweat on the left hand side.
Yeah, also he's dripping sweat, but his shirt looks pretty dry.
Yep. Good stuff. Anyway, have fun tonight. I'm very, very jealous. Hopefully you get a really good set list and have at least a couple of really good jams.
Thank you.
All right, titles.
My top two titles are I Am Too Good at Making Bombs and Not the Correct Squircle.
I think Bombs is better, personally, but I could go with either. Mm. Rub the Bottom is tempting, but the only reason
I'm leaning towards the Squircle one is because we talked about Icons for so damn long. It seems more emblematic of the episode, and also putting Bombs in the title and getting arrested for terrorism or something. But
yeah, I like Not the Correct Squircle better.
All right, let's go with that. All right, give me one second. Not that. God, again, I'm so sorry, Marco, for the edit you're going to have to do. I don't know what the hell happened.
You have plenty of time to do it, because this doesn't need to come out until Monday.
Yeah, I'm not going to... I'm actually not doing it today, so...
Oh, geez, you don't
Because I'm going to be driving to New Jersey for most of the days.
Right.
Give yourself a day to recover, too.
Yeah.
All right. Shoot, hold on. Oh, I need... Hold on, vamp for me, because John's thing is caught an empty URL, so I need... Which is fair, it is empty, but I need to put in a bogus URL for now.
I thought you were just going to fool yourself then.
I know. Well, I have
just
a big...
Put in a double underscore Marco. And that
I did. Don't worry. Right. I did. Although I'm missing the little blurb for Parakeet as well. I'll have to figure that out in a minute. All right. Let's say goodbye to the live people. When do we record next?
We are next 13th. Monday, 13th.
That's our member Monday. Special.
Oh, that's right. Okay, never mind.
Our recording is...
I was right there with you, Tom.
Wednesday the 15th.
15th. There we go. Wednesday the 15th. Go to normal time very briefly.
Very, very briefly.
Right.
For the Europeans that have hung out with us, I'm assuming there's at least a handful. Thank you for hanging out with us. And we'll hopefully, maybe I'll convince John to do another daytime recording at some point in the next 10 years. No promises, though. Bye, everybody.
As I'm melting here, Marco's going to he's going to hear the fan noise from my Mac Pro in this recording. I had to open the door because just being in here with the closed door, I was literally going to die.
All right. Bye, live people.